Hello, everyone. Welcome to the reading of the Fort Dodge Messenger for Wednesday, January 27th, 2021. I'm Kevin Rogers at the microphone today. Glad to have you listening, as always. Making a couple little adjustments as I go. But we'll go ahead and take a look at the front page of the Messenger. Fort Dodge area was hit with 10 inches of snow. Snow plows are working hard to keep the roads clear, is the title of the first article. Fort Dodge received an eye-opening 10 inches of snow Monday night and Tuesday morning as a storm blanketed a wide swath of the Midwest from Omaha to Chicago before moving east to Indiana and Michigan. The National Weather Service in Des Moines reported varying levels of snowfall in Webster County, with 9.5 to 10 inches reported in Fort Dodge. Areas outside of Webster County received slightly less snow, about 6 inches in Webster City, 4 to 5 inches in Humboldt, 1 to 2 inches in Kossuth County. There was a gradual trend seen decreasing off to the north, said Brooke Hagenhoff, a meteorologist. This was a tricky system because of a sharp cutoff on the north side. We went from 10 inches in Fort Dodge to just 2 inches 30 to 40 miles north. Over a short range, our totals dropped off quickly. The system that came through, which originated in the Texas Panhandle before moving north to Omaha and then east, blanketed areas further south in Iowa with as much as a foot of snow. Webster and Humboldt counties were on the northern edge of the system. While this type of system is common, it's tricky to forecast because we were unsure exactly where the cutoff would be in the days leading up to it, Hagenhoff said. We try to give a bigger range of snowfall to account for that cutoff beforehand. In the Fort Dodge area and north central Iowa, we had pretty wide snowfall ranges in our forecast to account for where that cutoff would occur. Winds were easier to predict, however. Steady estimates of 15 to 20 miles per hour were on point as gusts of over 30 miles per hour occurred in Webster County through the evening. Visibility was only slightly reduced during the winter storm due to the light, fluffy nature of the snow. The National Weather Service criteria for a blizzard warning, which Iowa did not reach, requires predictions of visibility being reduced to 1/4 mile and winds of at least 35 miles per hour occurring for 3 hours or more. The Webster County Secondary Road Crew was out at 4 o'clock on Tuesday to clear the county's 276 paved and 890 gravel roads, according to County Engineer Jamie Joel. The county had all 30 plow trucks working on the paved routes until about 9 a.m. They were looking pretty good at that time, so we switched over to the gravel roads, he said. Webster County is the fifth highest county in the state for vehicle miles of travel, Joel said. So getting the roads cleared after Monday night's storm quickly and safely was a high priority. The snow accumulation was quite different between the northern and southern parts of the county, Joel said. The south part of the county, we were around 9 to 10 inches. Today, when the county's trucks back out, it will send 16 of its plows out to wing the roads, using the wings on the side of the plows to push snow further back from the road. The county will send out 14 motor graders to help with the snow removal as well, Joel said. Over in Calhoun County, the snowfall accumulation varied across the area. According to the Calhoun County Sheriff, Pat Riley, he estimated most areas got between 5 and 6 inches of snow. The heavy snowfall didn't cause any major issues for Calhoun County on Monday and Tuesday, the sheriff said. We didn't have any major accidents, Riley said. There were a couple of cars that got stuck in town on side streets that hadn't been plowed yet. Despite heavy snowfall on Monday and Tuesday in the north central Iowa region, the Iowa State Patrol did not have to cover any significant collisions, according to Sergeant Neil Morris. We had a pretty good night with traffic flow, he said. The traffic volume was down when the snow was falling, which was good. People were listening to the warnings and advisories to not travel if they didn't have to. Warren said the Iowa State Patrol did assist a few vehicles that had slid into the ditch but were able to pull them out and get them on their way with no problems. Hagenhoff said the system that passed through Iowa impacted Michigan Tuesday afternoon. The brunt of heavier snowfall was sustained in Iowa and Nebraska as snowfall levels tapered off further east. The system continued to taper off as it finishes in New England and the Canadian provinces. And I know there's some talk about another snowstorm coming this weekend, but it's too early, they say, to tell us a whole lot about it. So I guess we'll find that out eventually. Restitution is part of an ex-chambers assistant sentence. In addition to a 10-year suspended prison sentence, 5 years of probation, and a $1,000 fine, which was also suspended, a former Webster City Chamber of Commerce administrative assistant will have to make restitution according to online court records. Leah Mulholland, 41, will have to pay back $193,205.08, along with court costs of $140. She was sentenced last week in Hamilton County District Court on a charge of first-degree theft. Mulholland entered a plea of guilty December 4, 2020, on the theft charge, three other charges, ongoing criminal conduct, influence enterprise, forgery, and unauthorized use of credit cards over $1,500 and under $10,000 were dismissed. She was arrested in February 2020 following a lengthy investigation related to more than $239,586.23 in improper disbursements from the Webster City Chamber of Commerce. On June 25, 2018, the Webster City Police Department requested the assistance of the Iowa Division of Criminal Investigation on a financial investigation involving the Webster City Chamber of Commerce and the former administrative assistant Mulholland. The Office of the Auditor of State found 367 checks issued to Mulholland totaling $236,313.03. Of those checks, 139 were payroll checks, 4 were bonuses, 2 were reimbursements, 222 were unauthorized checks ranging from $20 to $2,000, according to the auditor's report. Heading back to the main page of the Messenger, Fort Dodge man has been sentenced for illegal firearm possession. From Sioux City, a Fort Dodge man was sentenced Monday to more than 2 years in federal prison for illegal possession of a firearm, according to a news release from the United States Attorney's Office for the Northern District of Iowa. Justice Terry, age 26, pleaded guilty to prohibited person in possession of a firearm on September 18, 2020. On September 30, 2019, Terry was stopped by law enforcement after reports that he had assaulted his girlfriend with a handgun. His girlfriend, a passenger in the vehicle upon his arrest, had a restraining order against him issued by Wright County District Court. Evidence at hearing showed that he was an unlawful user of marijuana and or methamphetamine. During the traffic stop, he was in possession of a Taurus 357 Magnum revolver, loaded with 3 rounds under the driver's seat, plus 2 small bags of meth and 1 small bag of marijuana. Terry subsequently pleaded guilty and was sentenced in state court for assaulting his girlfriend. On the federal firearm charge, he was sentenced to 24 months in federal prison, including credit for 27 days previously served on the assault conviction. Following his prison term, he must serve a 3-year supervised release. Terry's case was prosecuted by Assistant United States Attorney Sean S. Weedy after investigation by the Wright County Sheriff's Department, the Fort Dodge Police Department, and the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives. The case was brought as part of Project Safe Neighborhoods, a program with the Department of Justice that uses a broad spectrum of stakeholders to identify and reduce the most pressing violent crime problems. PSN focuses enforcement efforts on the most violent offenders and partners with locally based prevention and reentry programs for lasting reductions in crime. The case was also part of Project Guardian, the Department of Justice signature initiative to reduce gun violence and enforce federal firearms laws. Heading back to the main page of the Messenger, there's a picture in today's Messenger. Webster County Public Health Nurse Tricia Nichols administers the most Sarah Hill Tuesday evening. About 40 of the clergy members of Webster County received their vaccine at Webster County Public Health on Tuesday. An Estherville police officer has been honored. An Estherville police officer who volunteered his own time to mentor young people earned a prestigious award for his commitment to reducing drug abuse the United States Attorney's Office for the Northern and Southern Districts of Iowa, and the Drug Enforcement Administration announced on Tuesday. Captain Nathaniel Dunleavy of the Westerville Police Department has been honored with the Enrique S. Camarena Award. Dunleavy has spent over a decade as the DARE officer for Esterville Schools. During that time, he expanded the program to include all students in kindergarten through fifth grade. He also started teaching refresher courses in the middle and high school. Captain Dunleavy is dedicated to educating students about the risks of drugs and substance abuse, said Peter E. Diggin, Jr., a U.S. Attorney for the Northern District of Iowa. By his actions, he has demonstrated that engaging with young people and being a positive role model is key to ensuring students remain drug-free. Dunleavy volunteered thousands of hours of his own time to teach, coach, and mentor hundreds of youth. Captain Dunleavy's commitment to students as a school resource officer, DARE program leader, coach, mentor, friend exemplify the beliefs of fallen DEA Special Agent Enrique Kiki Camarena and Darren Athimish, DEA Omaha Division Acting Special Agent in charge. Kiki strongly believed that one person could make a difference in the life of another, and Captain Dunleavy has proven that time true time and time again. On behalf of DEA, we thank Captain Dunleavy for his service and encouragement to future generations to live a drug-free life. Enrique Kiki Camarena was an 11-year veteran agent of the DEA who lost his life while working undercover. Camarena was kidnapped, brutally tortured, and murdered in Mexico while gathering information and evidence about drug lords. Deegan presented Dunleavy with the award on Tuesday. Turning to the From Our Files section of today's newspaper, this takes us back to January 2006. There's a picture in today's Messenger from back then. Otho Mayor Joe Hayes holds up a petition containing more than 260 signatures at a community meeting held with postal officials to discuss the fate of the Otho Post Office. Petitioners were seeking a new post office in Otho after the office was closed due to mold. The Otho Post Office was never replaced. Heading back to the main page of the Messenger, we'll click on the News of Record next, and we'll look at the News of Record for January 27th, 2021. Webster County Magistrate Court record shows violation of parole Jared Resch, 23, of Fort Dodge, and Allison Donnelly, 41, of Fort Dodge, both transferred to the Board of Parole. Brian Vaughn of Waterloo fined $180.75 for speeding. Operating vehicle without owner's consent, Andrea Lee, 32, of Fort Dodge, preliminary hearing set for February 4th. Driving under suspension, also Andrea Lee, continued 180 days. Fort Dodge police logs from Monday show a juvenile problem reported in the 200 block of Avenue M West, a car accident at Tower Drive and Kenyon Road, a runaway reported in the 1400 block of A Street West, a gas drive-off in the 2300 block of North 15th Street, an assault in the 1300 block of 3rd Avenue Northwest, a hit-and-run in the 800 block of Kenyon Road, a hit-and-run in the 1300 block of Avenue C, theft in the 3000 block of 1st Avenue South, a suspicious person in the 1300 block of A Street West. We'll head over next to the Messenger editorial page. New group provides beautiful places to recover. My Happy Haven supports women with cancer is the title of the Messenger editorial. Perhaps the scariest words a person can hear from their doctor are, "You have cancer." For the patient, what follows that diagnosis is a whirlwind of physical illness and emotional anguish that only a person who has survived it can properly describe. Fortunately, there is hope and support for those patients. Thanks to modern medicine, cancers that were once automatic death sentences are now treatable and even curable, and there are many organizations working to support the emotional, spiritual, and other needs of cancer patients. One of the newest of those groups in Fort Dodge recently made its presence known in a major way. The Fort Dodge affiliate of My Happy Haven remodels the bedrooms of women suffering from cancer It relies on donations and volunteers to produce sweeping transformations of bedrooms that might not have been changed in decades. The latest bedroom makeover was unveiled Sunday in the home of Taylor Johnson Berg in Fort Dodge. Doyle Construction, Baker Electric, both of Fort Dodge, donated their services to get the job done. Paint was donated by Diamond Vogel. Berg was the third area woman to receive a bedroom makeover. Carrie Swisher of Fort Dodge was first. Her bedroom makeover was done by the Mason City affiliate of My Happy Haven. She was so moved by what was done for her that she established the Fort Dodge branch of the group. Judy Van Alstyne of Eagle Grove was the next woman to receive a bedroom makeover. That was the first project completed by the new Fort Dodge affiliate of My Happy Haven. Because cancer treatments are as exhausting as the disease itself, these women are likely to spend a lot of time in the bedroom. They now have beautiful and modern places to rest and recover. My Happy Haven provides a unique form of support for women suffering from cancer. We salute the organization's volunteers and contractors who volunteer their services for these projects. And that is today's Messenger editorial. We're going to take a look next at this date in history. On this date in history, Soviet troops entered Auschwitz, Poland, freeing the survivors of the network of concentration camps and finally revealing the world the death of the horrors perpetrated there. That occurred on this date in 1945. Also on this date in 1943, on January 27th, future President Ronald Reagan, an Army Air Corps First Lieutenant during World War II, is on an active duty assignment with the Army's First Motion Picture Unit. Technically, Reagan was a unit's public relations officer. On this date, in 1970, John Lennon wrote and records Instant Karma in a single day. On this date in 1967, astronauts died in a launch pad fire. A launch pad fire during the Apollo program tests at Cape Canaveral killed astronauts Virgil Gus Grissom, Edward H. White II, and Roger B. Chaffee. An investigation indicated that a faulty electrical wire inside the Apollo 1 command module was the probable cause of the fire. On this date in 1965, the Shelby GT350 debuted. In 1888, the National Geographic Society was founded. In 1944, the siege of Leningrad was lifted. In 1973, the Paris Peace Accord was signed. The United States, South Vietnam, Viet Cong, and North Vietnam formally signed an agreement ending the war and restoring peace in Vietnam in Paris. Due to South Vietnamese unwillingness to recognize the Viet Cong's Provisional Revolutionary Government, all references to it were confined to a two-party version of the document signed by North Vietnam and the United States. Monica Seles won her first Grand Slam title on this date in 1996 after being attacked, and that was the Australian Open. In 1951, the first atomic detonation at the Nevada test site took place. In 2002, an explosion triggered a deadly panic in Nigeria. In 1978, the Dracula killer murdered four people. That took place in Sacramento, California. In 1862, President Lincoln ordered Union forces to advance. And in 1943, the Americans bombed the Germans for the first time during World War II. 8th Air Force bombers dispatched from their bases in England fly the first American bombing raid against the Germans, targeting the Wilhelmshaven port. Of 64 planes participating in the raid, 53 reached their target and managed to shoot down 22 German planes and lost only 3 planes in return. The 8th Air Force was activated in February 1942 as a heavy bomber force based in England. Its B-17 flying fortresses, capable of sustaining heavy damage while continuing to fly, and its B-24 Liberators, long-range bombers, became famous for precision bombing raids. And that is just a bit of what happened on this date in history, January 27th. Looking at the Webster City Freeman Journal, it was a good day for sledding. There's a picture of Ariana Angeles, age 5, as she takes a break from sledding Tuesday afternoon. She was one of the dozens of young people who made good use of a snow day coasting down Hospital Hill. Several inches of fresh snow following Monday's storm made for slippery fun on the slope. Webster City area schools were closed Tuesday due to hazardous travel conditions in the morning. Hamilton County health officials are seeing a slight downturn in the number of positive COVID-19 cases in recent weeks. Last week, there were 36 new cases that tested positive in Hamilton County, according to Public Health Administrator Shelby Kruna. She gave an update to the Board of Supervisors Tuesday morning during the regular board session. Nationwide, especially in the middle of the country and in Iowa, we've been seeing a downward trend, which is a good thing to see, as the vaccine is rolling out. We're also seeing lower positivity rates and fewer people testing positive. Kruna said her department is hearing anecdotally that people with signs and symptoms may not be testing. It's important that if you think you have COVID-19 that you get tested so we can do the contact tracing, she said. She also debunked a rumor that the health department is no longer contact tracing. That is not true. We partner with the schools, the state, and anybody who has to have a positive, who has a positive test. It gets sent to the health department, and we do follow-up. Kruna also said that those testing positive are also asked to go ahead and start contacting people they have been in contact with due to the lag of the time between the positive test results and when the health department finds out. She said it usually takes 4 days for positive test results to reach her department. So if people have taken a test, they need to stay home until they know the results, she said. And if you find out you're positive before the health department calls you, then go ahead and start assembling that list of individuals. Kruna said that if people don't feel comfortable calling the contacts, her department will make the calls and give instructions on testing and isolation. As of this morning, there have been 6,577 people tested in Hamilton County, with 4,947 testing negative. A total of 1,625 have tested positive. Kruna said there have been 30 deaths in Hamilton County related to COVID-19. The deaths range in age from 60 to 100, she added. She explained that the federal government contracted and purchased all the COVID-19 vaccine. The federal government then allocated the vaccine to the states by population. Since Iowa does not have as large a population as other states, our allotment is about 19,000 doses of Moderna vaccine each week. Then the state turns around and allocates those 19,000 doses to the 99 counties, once again, by population. Hamilton County averages about 200 doses per week when the health department is able to receive it. Please be patient as we work through the shortage, she urged area residents. We know that AstraZeneca and also Johnson & Johnson are in the pipeline for emergency use authorization, but until that time, we will only receive the Moderna vaccine in Hamilton County. Kruna said her department plans to give booster doses the first 2 weeks of February to those who have already received the first dose. A small allocation of 200 doses will be distributed to local clinics, Van Deese Family Health Clinic, Iowa Specialty Hospital Clinic in Webster City, and McFarland Clinic in Webster City, to start the process of vaccinating the 65 and older age group. Keep in mind that that's only 200 doses between the three clinics, and one of the clinics has two satellite locations, she said. There have been questions from the rural areas of the county with residents wondering when the vaccine would be available. We will eventually have enough vaccine flowing into the county, but at this time we have to do a very measured and planned rollout of this vaccine because it's not very much, she said. As each clinic has its own implementation plan for the vaccine, she suggested that area residents watch the clinic's social media pages to find out if they should call for an appointment. Kruna said she's waiting to hear if there will be another shipment scheduled for the second week of February. If there is an allocation, her department will retain some of the vaccine, which will target daycare providers, teachers, police officers, and firefighters. But once again, it will likely be just 200 doses, she says. It is a challenging jigsaw puzzle. Hamilton County Treasurer Judy Warwick presented her semi-annual report and settlement of assets Tuesday morning to the Hamilton County Board of Supervisors meeting. "It's not very fun this year, as you can see. We're down this year," she said of the investments. "We're down about 27% from last year. Iowa Public Authority Investment Trust interest is still down at about 0.02% as it was in June," she said. "The driver's license department is still working with appointments only. Most of the customers like it as well, since they don't have to stand around and wait in the hallway," she said. "That department is down about $2,000 from the previous year." She said that could be because customers have been going to one of the state's stations instead of waiting for an appointment at the courthouse. The motor vehicle department showed an increase of sales from the past year of $4,200. "Car sales are good. We've had a lot of titles coming in from all around. Tax collection is at about 56% for the first half and second half," she said. "I think that's pretty good for the situation our lives have been in this past year," Warwick said. Personnel matters were also on the agenda Tuesday morning. Chairman Dan Campidilli said that Jill Coons will be assuming the role of maintenance and janitorial director, effective January 16, 2021. She succeeds David Kelly, who recently passed away from a sudden illness, according to Campidilli. Coons' rate of pay will go from $20.38 to $21.65. I assume that's per hour. Samantha Lozano has been promoted to night supervisor at the Hamilton County rate. Her rate of pay, Hamilton County Jail, her rate of pay will go from $16.82 to $21.63. Gina Campidilli has resigned from the office manager position at the Briggs Woods Conference Center, and from a temporary position with the auditor's office, she will be taking a full-time position at Public Health. The cell phone reimbursement for Supervisor Jerry Clobberdance in the amount of $240 was approved, with Clobberdance abstaining from the vote. Auditor Kim Shaw said that the ballots for the upcoming local option sales tax renewal election, early voting will begin the first week in February, but registered voters can begin requesting absentee ballots now. Sheriff Doug Timmons thanks the public for its cooperation during the last winter storm. He said the event was, quote, pretty much incident-free. Thanks to the county plows, DOT drivers, and city workers, they were out early Tuesday getting our roads cleared, he said. You're listening to the Fort Dodge Messenger on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Information Service for the Blind, and now we will take a look at today's obituary page. Olathe Pickett. Olathe Pickett, whose sunrise was June 29, 1954, and her sunset January 6, 2021, in Minnesota. Funeral services will be at 3 o'clock Friday, January 29th, at Lapis Weiler Funeral Home. Visitation is 1 hour prior to the service at the funeral home. She is survived by her children, Julian Pickett, Naomi Pickett, Giselle Pickett, granddaughter Jane, siblings Otis L. Pickett Jr., Willie L. Pickett, Maddie Pearl Monday, and Shirley Brown and Richard, and many nieces and nephews whom she loved as her own. She was preceded in death by her parents, Otis and Pearlie May Pickett, sisters Teresa, Helen, Ethel May, and Deborah K. Pickett, brothers Percy Roshan and Johnny Pickett. Olathe was born in Fort Dodge and graduated from Fort Dodge Senior High in 1973. She then attended the University of Northern Iowa. She moved from Waterloo to Excelsior, Minnesota in 2008, where she worked as a home health aide with Synergy Home Health. Olathe Big O was beyond lucky, truly blessed, and immensely loved by her family. She always had an open heart and an open door policy that was immeasurable. Her spirit, love, and laugh were infectious and will be forever missed by all who loved her. Loretta Nelson. Loretta May Wise Nelson, known as Rusty, 92 of Fort Dodge, died Monday, January 25th at Unity Point Trinity Regional Medical Center after a short illness. Due to COVID-19, memorial services will be held at Bruce Funeral Home at a later date, with burial at Memorial Park Cemetery. Memorials may be directed to the discretion of the family. Loretta was born November 12, 1928, in Richards, Iowa, the daughter of Elmer and Viva Beam Weiss. She was reared and educated in Manson. On July 1, 1948, Loretta was united in marriage to Byron J. Snuffy Nelson in Spirit Lake. Loretta was a homemaker who also worked at TCI Grain Inspectors. She enjoyed spending time with family and friends, reading, training, and showing her dogs in obedience and agility and helping others train their dogs. She was a certified obedience dog trainer and a founding member of the Fort Dodge Kennel Club. Loretta is survived by her daughter, Patricia and Jeff Saunders, four grandsons, Zachary and Corey Nelson, Ryan Nelson and Tracy Saunders, five great-grandchildren, Mason, Nathan, and Olivia Saunders, Ellie Reinhardt, and Lily Nelson. She is also survived by many nieces and nephews, as well as her dog, Sherry. She was preceded in death by her parents, her husband in 1989, three sons, Lee, Jack, and Jeffrey Nelson, granddaughter Lacey Nelson, and her brothers Forrest and Eugene Wise. Loretta spent the last 3 years in the loving care of the staff at Villa Cottages. From Rolf, Betty L. Marine. Betty L. Marine, 97, of Rolf, died Tuesday, January 26th, at the Palo Alto County Health System in Emmitsburg. Family funeral services will be held Thursday, January 28th at Powers Funeral Home in Rolf. Burial will be at Clinton Garfield Cemetery near Rolf. There will be no visitation. Powers Funeral Home in Rolf is handling arrangements. And that is the extent of today's obituary page. Heading over to the sports section. Home debut is the title of the first article from the sports section. Sarah Horn has summed it up as just as being a weird day. After opening the season with an upset of then number 5 Kirkwood this past Sunday, the 7th-ranked Iowa Central volleyball team made their home debut Tuesday night, sweeping Ellsworth inside Hodges Fieldhouse. Scores were 25-12, 25-13, 25-22. With no crowd in attendance, a snow day for the school, and coming 2 days before another ICCAC showdown with Des Moines area, on Thursday, Horn admitted the surroundings were unusual to say the least. "It was just a weird day overall, but we figured it out," she said. "I thought the first two sets were really clean with low errors, which is what we have to do. Our mindset was good, and we played our game for the most part." The Tritons, 2-0 overall for the season, are the two-time defending league champions. They have won now 19 of the 20 matches with ICCAC opponents and are 42-10 since 2014 in those meetings. Keely Anderson, a returning All-American, led the way with 9 kills and 3 digs. Caitlin Steffes added 8 kills and 9 digs. Bailey Dugan had 7 kills and Angel Baylark recorded 5. Anderson came out strong in the opening set, recording 3 kills, with Steffes adding 3 as well. The Tritons never trailed, using a 7-point run to take command. The second saw much of the same as Anderson, Steffes, and Baylark dominated at the nets, leading 7-5. Iowa Central rallied off 12 of the next 14 points in its favor. "Ellsworth is much improved over last season," she said. "I thought they did some nice things and took advantage of some areas we weren't as clean in. Give them credit for forcing us to do that." The Tritons build a 19-10 lead before Horn looked to her bench, providing key court time for several players. Anderson came back in with the score tied 22-all and helped finish off the Panthers with 3 consecutive points. "It was great to get those girls in there for the first time," Horn said. "That's always fun to do." Alicia Johnson finished with 31 assists and 6 digs for Iowa Central, while Baylen Johnson had 10 digs. Haley Alaherthy recorded 3 kills with 2 solo blocks and 4 assisted blocks. As a team, the Tritons had 36 kills, 34 assists, 3 aces, 39 digs, 3 solo blocks, and 14 assisted blocks. Gabby Damiano led Ellsworth with 8 kills on the night. Iowa Central returns to action on Thursday against DMAC. The Bears opened their season against Kirkwood last night. in his third season as Humboldt football coach, Derek Elman found a new level of success last fall, pushing them in their first winning season in 5 years. The Wildcats finished the season 5-4, and for their efforts, Elman was named the Class 3A Region 1 Coach of the Year. It was totally a surprise when I found out I had been voted Region 1 Coach of the Year by the IFCA, Iowa Football Coaches Association, said Elman. It means a lot for my coaching peers to nominate, then select me as the Coach of the Year. When you look at the list of names, it is very humbling for me to be included in this group. Elman went on to say, without his players and coaches, the award would not have been possible. The kids bought into what myself and the other coaches are doing, and I want to thank them for all they do for the program. When I came here 3 years ago, it was easy to see Humboldt is a special community. Our players are committed to making Humboldt great in all sports. Under junior quarterback Caden Mattson, the Wildcats threw for over 1,500 yards and ran for over 1,400. Mattson finished the season 102 for 172, passing for 1,515 yards and 14 touchdowns. On the ground, he ran for 1,068 yards and 18 scores. Elman attributes the success on the field to his players, administration, and family that has supported him in the program. The leadership displayed by the players and coaches is second to none, Elman said. It's also great to have a former head coach, Greg Thomas, as a mentor. Greg has been such an amazing sounding board in my transition over the last 3 years. I truly admire him. I am thankful that I have great coaches to work with, great administration, players, and families that are all behind what we do. A special thank you goes out to my wife, Amy, my daughter, Peyton, and my son, Noah. Without their support and endless encouragement, none of this would be possible. State dates will stay the same for wrestling, it's been announced. The Iowa High School Athletic Association's Board of Control recently announced that the 2021 state wrestling tournament will be held with its originally scheduled dates and times. The state dual team tournament will remain February 17th at Wells Fargo Arena in Des Moines, with the traditional state tournament to follow February 18th through the 20th. All of the up-to-date COVID-19 protocols and guidelines must be followed. The IHSAA is grateful to all those who have worked to make this wrestling season possible, said Athletic Association Executive Director Tom Keating. The board feels strongly that the traditional schedule can be safely completed for the largest possible competition and audience at each day of the 2021 IHSAA State Wrestling Championships. Social distancing requirements and COVID-19 related safety precautions will lead to limited spectator capacity with reserved seating blocks and participant procedures required at Wells Fargo Arena. The championships average more than 75,000 attendees across all sessions annually, but capacity will currently allow for less than 4,000 tickets per session this year. Ticket information will be announced by the IHSAA and the Iowa Events Center as it becomes available. Participating member schools will be contacted first for purchasing options. Due to restricted capacity and to offer participating wrestlers an opportunity to remain at the event, ticket prices have been increased to $15 per session. Dual team tournament, traditional tournament sessions 1 through 7, and $20 for the traditional tournament finals session 8. Cheerleaders will be unable to attend the state traditional tournament as event performers due to space limitations. Further details on attendance and entry for member schools, credentialed media, and event personnel will be announced as they become available. The IHSAA Board of Control also released reclassifications for high school football. Beginning this fall, Class 5A will now include the state's 36 largest schools based on enrollments grades 9 through 11, with 4A and 3A including the respective next 36 on down the line. There will be 9 regular season games and 16 playoff qualifiers in each class. Class 2A and 1A will consist of 48 squads and have 8 regular season games with 32 postseason qualifiers. Class A and 8-player squads will have the same number of games and playoff participants. Teams in 2A, 1A, and Class A, an 8-player, will be permitted to play a 9th regular season contest should they not qualify for the postseason. And in case you're wondering, I know the Fort Dodge wrestlers were supposed to host Marshalltown last night, and I know that the Fort Dodge senior high basketball teams were supposed to be in action, and the St. Edmunds teams were supposed to be in action, and I'm sure that all those games were canceled due to the weather, and so there's nothing to report sports-wise concerning those activities. Turning over to the Marshalltown Times-Republican, a Marshalltown high school graduate appeared in a commercial briefly that premiered during both Sunday's National Football League Championship games. David Hopkins, a member of the high school class of 1983, was watching the Tampa Bay Buccaneers versus the Green Bay Packers when he suddenly recognized a familiar face. "It was a shock. I didn't even know it was going to be on," Hopkins said. "I was watching the football game and I was like, hey, that looks like me." Flipping over to the Kansas City Chiefs versus Buffalo Bills later that night, he saw the commercial and himself again. Hopkins began receiving phone calls from messages and friends asking if he was the one driving the truck next to a FedEx airplane in the commercial, but he had to confirm through YouTube to see if it was really himself in the video. "It was filmed about 18 months ago, and I thought it just went into the wastebasket," Hopkins said. "When I first saw it, I didn't believe it, and then I remembered, yeah, that was me." In the commercial, Hopkins is driving a FedEx vehicle at the Los Angeles International Airport for approximately 1 second of FedEx's 30-second commercial entitled Moving Forward. It is an advertisement spreading awareness about the company's role in shipping the COVID-19 vaccine. Working as an aircraft manager at the LA International Airport for 25 years and retiring in August, Hopkins says he had nothing to do with shipping the COVID-19 vaccine himself, but did serve as the liaison between FedEx and the filming company when the footage was shot. Only appearing for a second, Hopkins said the process of filming the commercial was an all-day event, taking up 8 hours to shoot for just a 1 second clip. "There were over 50 people there. It was unbelievable how many people were there," Hopkins said. "The producer came to me and said, hey, we need an actor. Would you like to be an actor in several different scenes? And I said, sure. I did that scene probably 10 times when they filmed it. I did 2 other scenes as well. Maybe they'll show up in future commercials." Despite only a second of a long day of filmmaking into the final product, Hopkins is thankful to be a part of the commercial making process. "It was really neat, and those in the filming company were all really nice people," Hopkins said. "It was an amazing experience." The other day I read an article from the Marshalltown Times-Republican about how many people from the Iowa Veterans Home who work there have refused or have not received the vaccine. Here's an update on that article. The leader of the Iowa Veterans Home says that despite participating in educational seminars on the COVID-19 vaccine, more than 40% of the nursing facility's workers are still refusing the vaccine. Many of the workers at the state-run facility are state-licensed or state-certified healthcare providers tasked with caring for an elderly population for whom the coronavirus is particularly dangerous. According to state and federal data, 1,866 of the 4,492 Iowans who have died of coronavirus, 42% in total, were residents of nursing homes like the Iowa Veterans Home. So far, 21 of the home's 415 residents have contracted the coronavirus, and 5 of them have died. Vaccines were first offered at the Marshalltown home the week of January 10th. "Our first vaccine clinic had 93% of our residents saying yes and 54% of our staff. The home has been conducting educational seminars for workers in all 3 shifts," he added, "with the goal of informing all the workers about the positive aspects of receiving the vaccine. We have encouraged all staff to receive the vaccine and to speak with their individual medical provider. We again last week and this week are offering education and encouraging all staff to attend and ask questions." The IVH commandant said he is proud to say more staff have said yes to the vaccine, with an additional 4% of the staff now expected to get their first shot early next week. early next month when Walgreens representatives come to the home to provide the second dose for those who initially agreed to take the vaccine. That would bring staff acceptance of the vaccine to 58%. We have a wonderful partnership with Walgreens, Algeri said, the commandant, adding there has never been shortage of the doses of the Pfizer vaccine through Walgreens, and the company has filled 100% of the home's request for the vaccine. At a December 22nd press conference, Algeri said the home's COVID-19 unit had been staffed by volunteers. The American Legion of Iowa reported in its newsletter that only 444 of the state-run home's 904 workers received their first shot in the first two dose series when vaccinations were first given at the home. And I just remembered I had some other sports shorts to read to you. The Southeast Valley girls earned a 64-57 victory over Pocahontas area Tuesday night. Chloe Hicks led the Jaguars with 21 points. Emily Hemestad added 13. Madison Lane had 10. Abby Oberhelman paced the Indians with 19 points. Acacia Dutcher added 17 points. The second-ranked Newell Fonda girls basketball team cruised to an 80-42 win over Emmitsburg Tuesday night. Bailey Severs led the Mustangs with 17 points. Macy Severs, Maggie Walker, Kiera Jungers, and Ella Larson had 9 points each. Abby Sheeney had 16 to pace the E-Hawks. And I came across a sports column I don't recall reading. A Different Perspective is the title of this column. Reclassification for 2021 will help ease Dodgers' long-standing struggle with football schedule. I alluded to the decision by the Athletic Association to restructure football, and this article goes into a little more depth. In 1994, the best Fort Dodge football team I've ever seen visited West Des Moines and lost to Valley during the regular season 41-6. History repeated itself in 2000 when the Tigers beat an otherwise playoff-caliber Dodger squad by the exact same score. The 2005 Fort Dodge Dodgers were 6-2 against the rest of their schedule, but Valley trounced them twice, once in the regular season and once in the playoffs, by a total point differential of 75-18. In 2010, a ranked Fort Dodge senior high squad brimming with talent and confidence and on their way to a Central Iowa Metro League Iowa Conference crown suffered a 42-3 setback at West Des Moines-Dowling. And the 2018 Dodgers, who rewrote all the program's offensive record books during a 7-2 campaign, were rewarded with a first-round playoff game against Dowling, at the time the five-time defending Class 4A state champions, with the Maroons pitching a 41-0 shutout on their way to their sixth title in a row. I use these games not as anecdotal examples, but rather main talking points for the elephant in the room. It existed way back in 1992 when Fort Dodge first joined the CIML. Today, that elephant is bigger than ever. In football especially, the Dodgers simply don't belong with the Valleys and Dowlings, or most recently, Waukees and Ankenies of the world. That's not disparaging our community's athletes, and it's not an excuse. It's simply stating a fact. Everyone sees it. But until Thursday, nothing had been done to shake things up. The Iowa High School Athletic Association changed that by formally announcing the first large classification shift in over 30 years. The top 36 schools on the state's enrollment list will move to Class 5A this fall. This means Fort Dodge, currently at number 38, but well below the cutoff line, will compete at the 4A level, joining similar-sized schools like Mason City, Indianola, Waterloo East, Des Moines Hoover, Burlington, Clinton, and North Scott. According to the most recent Iowa Beds document, total students in grades 9 through 11, Fort Dodge has an enrollment of 844, or 281 per class. Waukee, by comparison, is at 2,267 students, an average of 756. Valley is at 2,192, or 731 per class. Johnston is at 1763, or 588 per class. All are at least twice as big as Fort Dodge Senior High. Ankeny, which split in 2013, now has two schools, Ankeny High and Centennial, in the top 15 in the state for enrollment. As recently as the mid-1990s, Fort Dodge and Ankeny were similar in size, both with their schools and overall population. Today, Ankeny has 61,900 residents, up from approximately 25,000 in 1995, with 2,655 students in grades 9 through 11, up approximately 950 in 1995. Fort Dodge is at 24,300 and 844, respectively, in 2020-21. In the not-so-distant future, both Ankeny and Waukee school districts are planning on adding a third high school. Waukee is first splitting next year, and at that point, all six schools in the two communities will still land in the state's largest athletic class. In other words, things have changed dramatically since the CIML added Fort Dodge nearly 30 years ago. At the time, Waukee was a 2A program. Johnston and Southeast Polk were still 3A. Now they are all top five for enrollment. On the football field especially, the numbers absolutely matter. For example, the Dodgers' all-time record against Valley is 4-22, 3-21 versus Ankeny schools, 2-8 versus Waukee, 3-7 versus Southeast Polk, 1-8 against Dowling. In 2010 and 11, Fort Dodge faced Valley, Waukee, Dowling, and Urbandale in the regular season alone, while squaring off with Waukee and Ankeny in the playoffs respectively. The Dodgers are recently coming off the most prominent decade on the gridiron in 70 years. Since 2009, the Dodgers have gone 61-54 and are 27-6 against main rivals Ames, Marshalltown, and Mason City. Yet, during that same stretch of success, Senior High is a combined 4-26 versus Valley, Dowling, Ankeny, Waukee, and Southeast Polk, making them 57-28 against everyone else. This isn't a perfect plan, and it doesn't guarantee anything for the Dodgers moving forward. There are plenty of talented programs that will join them at the new 4A level. North Scott, Indianola, Dallas Center, Grimes, Norwalk, Cedar Rapids, Xavier, Council Bluffs, Lewis Central, and Waverly Shell Rock, to name a few, are perennial contenders. These aren't the state's behemoths, though. Fort Dodge can breathe a little easier today, knowing it's going to be more about having comparable talent and depth moving forward. In the past, the Dodgers had to hope their top athletes were enough and hang on for dear life. The rosters weren't even remotely comparable. Fort Dodge played one of the tougher slates in the state this past fall, losing four of its five games to Ankeny, Sioux City East, Urbandale, and Dowling, two opponents with a combined record of 29-7. All eight of their 2020 opponents will be in Class 5A this coming season. The schedule has taken a physical and mental toll on even the best Dodger teams year after year for as long as I can remember. Fort Dodge has been forced to punch above its weight over and over again and has done so admirably, but when push comes to shove and injuries slowly decimate the lineup, the program never had much of a chance to advance in the postseason, where it hasn't won a single game since 1994, its only playoff victory in the last 42 years. This gives Fort Dodge an opening. The shift is long overdue, but better late than never. The Iowa High School football coaches and the Iowa High School Athletic Association Board of Control deserve credit for addressing an issue that could help rejuvenate a sport in desperate need of a more competitive balance. There have been memorable Dodger moments on the gridiron against the state's elite, a 2010 conference title win at Valley, a historic comeback and last-second victory at Southeast Polk in 2018. It's been entertaining to watch Fort Dodge scratch, claw, and battle as the little school that could, trying to take down football programs with Division I talent and rosters at least double their size. Realistically speaking, though, these rivalries won't exactly be missed, and frankly, this kind of reclassification should be seriously considered in other sports moving forward as well. My heart was a bit nostalgic when I heard the news. My head, it was saying good riddance. And that is from Eric Pratt, sports editor for The Messenger. Looking quickly at the forecast, mostly sunny skies on Thursday, a high of 20, cloudy on Friday, a 28. High Saturday on 32 with light snow, Sunday 30 and cloudy skies. Partly sunny, mostly sunny Monday. Partly sunny Tuesday, high of 28 and 29. Wednesday, warming up to 35 degrees under mostly cloudy skies. Thursday, 80% chance of a frozen mix and a 30-degree high. Friday, 20 degrees and windy. Lows at night in the mid-teens to mid-20s during that time until a week from Friday when it'll get really cold at night, maybe down to 4 degrees. That's going to bring us to the end of the reading of the Fort Dodge Messenger. Of course, this podcast and many others are available to you at iowaradioreading.org. I'm Kevin Rogers at the microphone. Thank you for sharing this time with me, and I look forward to visiting you with you again real soon here on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Information Service for the Blind. Stay safe, stay healthy, and we'll talk to you again real soon. Ciao for now.